Blog Talk Radio.
Round one. Fight.
Minions, you have stumbled across the number one internet sports talk show in the world on Saturday morning between the hours of 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. right here atop the Balance Studios, live from Indianapolis, Indiana. Well, the suburbs, west suburbs of Indianapolis. Hey, it's MotoGP weekend. Not really. I said MotoGP. I actually literally said that, didn't I? Can we start that over? Back it up. It's Indy GP weekend. Woo! Man. It is race day. That is for sure. We just got to get the right race going on. Woo! We'll put that on the editing floor there. Cut that out of there. So welcome to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Today is the third running of the Indianapolis Grand Prix, formerly known as the Angie's List Grand Prix, out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We're standing by for Matt Embry of Popular Speed, our IndyCar contributor, going to talk with us about all the goings-on with the race today. I tell you what, a lot of cool stuff going on. Maybe you caught my article at Speedway Digest. Selfless plug. Yeah, go to Speedway Digest, check out my article. A lot of things going on out the track this weekend. Matt Embry of Popular Speed joins us. How you doing, sir? Happy race day to you.
Good stuff as always, Tommy. I tell you what, a lot of things to look forward to, and obviously the IndyCar Grand Prix, the little precursor to the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500 presented by Pengrade, but a lot of interesting situations. But like we said, last week's show, is this just a smokescreen of what could happen in the Indy 500? Because Chevrolets are near the top of the grid today. Could we have a complete role reversal next week when Honda takes over and is allowed to uncork their speed on the straightaways? Of course, it's easy to do that since the Indianapolis Speedway 2.5 mile oval is pretty much all straightaways. So we'll be interested to see how things develop today and then certainly coming into next weekend.
Well, absolutely. I tell you what, Will Power, not only does he get the pole, but he certainly breaks a track record. It's going to be a great day. At least it looks like it's going to be a great day for Team Penske. Simon Patajon was the favorite coming in to the Grand Prix. Same thing as last year. But one of the things that's got to happen, though, for Team Penske, even though they're starting out at the front, they are definitely in the danger of the first lap curse that has happened at every race at the Indianapolis Grand Prix. They've not had a clean lap one since it started. If that holds true today, Team Penske could be in problems.
I don't think it's necessarily as good a chance of happening, at least in the front row, maybe in the mid-pack or back of the grid entering turn one, so that's a tight quarter. Now, granted, the captain team, Roger Penske, doesn't necessarily have team orders out, but I think they'll say, yeah, you can race for it, but remember, don't take each other out, because our ultimate goal is for one of you guys to win the race today, and you can't do that if you get into each other. So It'll be a tough run to turn one, certainly, but I don't think we're going to see contact because obviously the order is going to be out. Don't take out your teammate.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Definitely not earlier or ever, that's for sure. Well, let's kind of walk through the weekend, and we'll kind of start. We've got racing all day long at the track. I'll be headed out there immediately following this show down at 16th in Georgetown. Very, very excited to be out there to cover another race out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. One of the things that I have fun watching and did yesterday was the USF 2000s, the Pro Mazda and the Indy Lights series. So certainly those are great races to watch, and great. I really like to watch these young kids in the young series that have the ability to be their future drivers of IndyCar. Talk with us about some of these developmental series. IndyCars did a great job of producing great drivers from the young age. They go pick them out right out of the kart season, put them in the 2000 series, the Road to Indy Pro Mazda and or Indy Lights, and then up into IndyCar. Talk with us about IndyCar, the developmental series, and what will we see on the track today with these young drivers?
Well, Pro Mazda is already in the books today. Congratulations to Victor Franzotti, who won that race just a moment ago. TJ Fisher finishing second. But obviously, you see future Indy 500 drivers in the field. I mean, we got Ed Jones, Mazda Road to Indy graduate. You got Spencer Pigot, Gabby Chavez, obviously a few more potentially that could join them next year with Colton Herta, possibly one name that's being mentioned as far as with the Steinbrenner Andretti relations. So a lot of things to look forward to going ahead to this weekend. Obviously, Indy Lights with their second race of the weekend coming up later this afternoon. And obviously, just about 2 hours from now, the final warm-up session for the IndyCar Grand Prix. So a lot to look forward to. And we're already racing at 16th and Georgetown already this morning.
Well, is something special about hearing the sound of cars as you come underneath the tunnel there at 16th and Georgetown. You and I were out there last year. Certainly we have a much better weather day today than what we did last year. But one of the things that it does not matter with the Grand Prix anyway, they're going to race rain or shine unless there's some like major lightning storm or something really out of the ordinary. But if it's just rain or cold, they're going to go ahead and run that race, whether it's rain or shine. Certainly it looks like we've got some great sunshine today for the Indianapolis Grand Prix. It's a 14-turn road course inside the famed Oval Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Walk us through the course. Obviously, as we know, turn one is a very, very tight one. I think it's the one spot where a lot of drivers get nervous. If you're interested in seeing a lot of action, turn one viewpoint would be the place to be. But certainly there's all kinds of great places to watch the race throughout the track. So walk us through the Indy road course at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Very simply put, Tom, I think if you want to be competitive, there's three places where you've got to have your car perfect. One is the snake pit before you get onto the front straightaway. One, obviously, is turn one, and then the other section is Holwood Boulevard. Those are the three places where if your car is not right, it will show up in the results and you will get passed very easily. Obviously, you talk about situations involving the race. Obviously, being a lot warmer this year, I think tire degradation will be a much bigger issue as opposed to last year. I don't think you may see a situation where the red tires may not be as effective as they were a year ago with the colder conditions. And then obviously, what they also consider is push to pass. Ultimately, it cost Connor Daly the win last year when he used up all his push to pass before the halfway point. He became a sitting duck at the end and faded at the finish. So I think you look at the track right now, getting through one and two is obviously great, but you got to get out of the snake pits area on the final part of the lap, and then obviously getting through that quick chicane and onto Holwood Boulevard to be able to set up another passing opportunity. If your car is not good in those three positions, you're going to have a very long day, and you can pretty much kiss your chances of winning a race like this goodbye.
I'm really excited to watch today, and it's going to be a fun thing for fans. But more importantly, I think this is just an awesome improvement on technology, where we're at with modern technology. Sam Schmidt, obviously paralyzed for life after a round one practice hitting the wall in Walt Disney World many years ago, paralyzed him for life, has come back to not only you can't be being paralyzed, but not only to not allow that to hold him back, but has gone on to own some great Indy Lights teams and is now owner of the team that James Hinchcliffe runs, which also can make some noise today. But he's going to be on the track racing, that's right, racing in a Corvette against the famed and legend Mario Andretti. Talk with us a little bit about this setup. I think it was Arrowpoint Electronics that put this Corvette together so that Sam Schmidt could race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway once again.
This actually is the fourth year that they've had this car. It was put together in which he has a suit on that has a bunch of motion reaction things, especially on the top of his head. There's a hat there. And all he needs to do is either move his head left or right, and that'll turn the steering wheel. There is a control similar to what he uses with his wheelchair, whether he bites down or blows into a little tube, which will move his wheelchair. The car will act the same way. It'll either hit the accelerator or hit the brakes. So he's got a lot of experience with this vehicle. Should have no problem getting around. The big thing, though, at this event is there's a lot of donations, and this is being done for charity reasons. There's a lot of opportunities to get onto, I believe, IndyCar.com. I don't remember what the hashtag is, but there's a lot of chances to donate to help with paralysis and cancer. So there's a lot of things going on related to this event involving charity. So if you haven't already, get onto those sites and donate for a great cause and a great event coming up, obviously, here in a few hours.
Right, absolutely. And what we'll do is we'll have it up throughout that race, but you can actually text. I got it here right here. You can actually you can actually text. Fans can make a $10 donation and root for their favorite driver by texting either Sam or Mario to 50555 before or during the race. Proceeds go to the Schmidt's nonprofit Conquer Perlauer. Ours is now. Yeah, there we go, that word. Certainly a very, very interesting story, and I think it's a fun story. I think it's a great story, and Sam Schmidt's a great guy. Sam Schmidt's really a testament to not letting a handicap get you down. So certainly I'm excited to see that, and again, I mean, how historic is it for him to race Mario Andretti? Now, we say race, but let's kind of put it in context for those people that maybe aren't really race fans. They're not going to be racing like you would see later on in the afternoon with the Grand Prix. They're just basically going to be moving through the course. But how did they come up with the term race?
Well, obviously, you got two cars on the track and two guys that are driving as hard as they can. Obviously, Sam isn't putting it just in cruise mode when he's been on the track with this car. And obviously, Mario drives the two-seater at most of the IndyCar events, so obviously he's still competitive. And it gives them a chance to, you know, have a competition where it's a controlled environment. No one's in any danger, seriously injured or anything like that. And it's obviously a good kick for the fans. You know, I compare what Sam Schmidt does to the Ironman athletes. I've seen stories of, you know, amputees competing in the event and completing, people confined to wheelchairs and completing that event. That's similar to what Sam Schmidt's doing here. He's really showing that if you have a mind and you have a will, that even if you are not necessarily able-bodied, you can still perform and do the things that an able-bodied person can. And that's the great thing about what Sam Schmidt's doing by competing in this car.
Well, let's talk a little bit about willpower. As we mentioned, he set a new track record. Oh, no track record. I tell you what, I need to find that soundbite. Oh, Tom Carnegie, nobody's ever said track record better than that. You knew you were at Indianapolis Motor Speedway when you heard Tom Carnegie say, it's a new track record. You may not think at 129 miles an hour, 129.687 miles per hour is a track record. Actually, I think he went a little bit faster than that, but it is the road course. So Will Power is really positioning himself into a good spot for the Indianapolis Grand Prix.
Yeah, the other question is, can he avoid all the jinx and bad luck that have plagued him in the first three races? That's the big thing that's gotten in his way so far. You look ahead to the situations. Obviously, his best finish came at Phoenix. Had bad luck at St. Pete with mechanical problems. Some misfortune with contact at Long Beach. And then the dilapidated tire at Alabama, which even if he had stayed out, I don't know if he would have been able to hold off Joseph Newgarden anyway. So those were three races where he was a contender, but he was unable to get to the finish, you know, as a contender in any of them. And then obviously got the Penske guys all up there. Elio Castroneves starting second. It's the third straight front row appearance for him in a road race. Joseph Newgarden, who won at Alabama, starts in the number three spot. Then you got the X Factor, Juan Pablo Montoya, who certainly has lost no sign of competitiveness, qualifying fifth. And it's hard for me to believe, based on the guy who I thought was going to be the favorite, Simon Pagenaud, he qualifies seventh. Tom, this is a guy that absolutely ran away with this race a year ago. I mean, how does he get beat by all four of his teammates?
That was my question. That was actually a great segue there. I have no idea. Obviously, as we know, he did. But I heard some talk that it was that they were having a hard time getting the trim exactly right before qualifying, and that they had some issues with some downforce issues. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is, but certainly a question that we're going to be watching and looking to today, because as you mentioned, you know, where that turn, that lap one curse may come at, he's right in the middle of all of that. Let's talk a little bit about the qualifying order where we're at. Obviously, we talked about Will Power, then right behind him, Elio Castroneves. Joseph Newgarden has proven that he can win on a road course. Scott Dixon and Juan Pablo Montoya is back for two Indianapolis races. Then we've got Sebastian Bourdais, as we mentioned, Simon Pagenaud, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Alexander Rossi, winner of last year's 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, a title that he'll hold on to forever. We'll see how he can do at the road course today and on into the 500 into next year, later in the month. James Hinchcliffe, Marco Andretti, GK Tony Kanaan, who saw his day in very, very early, actually right in front of us, Matt, last year, and we watched him sit in that SUV the entire race because of that turn one course, so hopefully he has a better day today. Ed Jones, Max Chilton, Connor Daly, you would think he would do well there. He did very, very well in the Grand Prix last year, so we'll see where he ends up at. Spencer Piggott, which certainly there's some storylines around him. Elisha McHale, Carlos Munoz, Charlie Kimball, Graham Rahal, J.R. Hillebrand, and Tomoka Sota from Japan round out the qualifying order for this year's Indianapolis Grand Prix.
How things change from the starting grid. Remember, Charlie Kimball qualified second last year. He's starting 19th. Didn't expect Connor Daly, the first time all year he has out-qualified his teammate Carlos Munoz. Spencer Piggott, who was on my Firestone Fantasy Challenge team this weekend, I thought he would be much higher up on the grid. He only qualified 16th. And then Graham Rahal. He looked good during the first practice session. He was the fastest Honda. Now he ended up qualifying 20th, and then Takuma Sato. I think a lot of people, a lot of the, you know, boo birds are saying, why did you we're getting on Michael Andretti, why did you hire Takuma Sato? I think they're going to be going in full force again this weekend. Sato, with his talent, he should not have qualified dead last.
Well, and I'm kind of concerned about Sato. I don't know that he's been lighting the world on fire since we've seen him win in Long Beach about 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know what's going on over there at AJ Foyt Racing, but certainly they got to begin to look at Sato. Is he a liability, or is he somebody that can move the team forward in future races?
Yeah, that's the thing. He got such a great start at St. Pete. We're thinking, well, they're a genius, and all of a sudden, like you said, they had the problems at Long Beach, never challenged at Alabama, never challenged at Phoenix. It looks like they're not going to challenge here unless, you know, an early yellow and they could possibly go off sequence with something. But big surprises there. And you look at the top half of the grid, I think the one name along with Pagel that hangs out is James Hinchcliffe. This is a track, these high of high-speed road courses, where it seems like he seems to take advantage, and he only qualifies 10th. That's a kind of a surprise to buy. I thought he would be a little bit further up, especially considering this is a guy that seems to get fired up when he gets to the Brickyard every year, kind of like Anello Castroneves does, and did not expect him to only qualify 10th.
Well, absolutely, and I certainly expected that he would qualify a little bit better than he did. So let's kind of walk through the grid here. We got one rookie in today's race, and that's Ed Jones, qualified in his number 19 car and starting in the 13th position with a speed of 127.248. Ed Jones, rookie out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, running his first Indianapolis Grand Prix.
Obviously, a lot of firsts for Ed Jones. First Dubai-born driver ever to compete at the Indianapolis 500, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Defending Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tire Champion. That's what got him in here with that advancement money. Question with my mind, though, is where is Dale Coyne's psyche right now? We saw how they were not competitive at Phoenix. Obviously, that doesn't bode well when we get to the Indianapolis 500. But ultimately, I think you'll see them give it a heck of an effort to try to win today because unless they can turn things around, they're going to have a tough time, I think, even with the addition of Pippa Mann with the Indianapolis 500. So I think you're going to see a desperate effort from both Bourdais and Jones trying to salvage something from this event today.
Well, I kind of just want to go back to the developmental series because I want to just kind of walk through each of, the you're all right there, buddy. And try to just kind of walk through some of the session results and the drivers that we saw with some of these developmental series that we'll see on the track today, starting with the USF 2000. Certainly a lot of, you know, you'll see kids that are 14, 15 years old, typically around 15 or 16 years old. I believe that their race was yesterday. So talk with us a little bit about the USF 2000, what it is, and how they come up with into being able to get into the USF 2000.
Not quite that young. I mean, you got Kyle Kaiser, who's 21, and they were saying he was not ready yet for the Indianapolis 500. You obviously have a lot of contenders. You had the Andretti Autosport teammates, the aforementioned Colton Herta, and Nico Yamin. Nico Yamin taking the victory on Friday. I don't see anything necessarily in front of me as far as a starting lineup for race two necessarily. Let me see if I can find something here. But Nico Yamin got the victory on race one. Zachary Clément-DeMail finished second. Kyle Kaiser finished third. And so on down the line. And looking ahead to race number two, obviously you're going to see some of those contenders. Obviously Yamin with Andretti. With that ride, obviously, the next line is possibly looking ahead to Andretti for 2018 with the IndyCar, especially if Sato continues to struggle. That's obviously going to be a situation where you might see possibly another driver being sought. And, of course, a lot of unknowns. We talk about futures for, you know, some of these older drivers on the circuit, like the Tony Kanaans, for instance, the Yellow Castroneveses. Will they give way in the next year or two, possibly open up some doors? So there are opportunities out there for some of these guys, not just the ones I mentioned, but you also have Santiago Rivarudia, who, when Schmidt was considering possibly expanding to three cars this season, he was one man that was mentioned for one of those rides. Shelby Blackstock's been mentioned in the past. And then you have Pato O'Ward, who has made a jump from ProMod to the Indy Lights. Did participate for some reason in the Grand Prix of Indianapolis race one yesterday. I'll have to look into that. But ultimately, you got some big names in here. And obviously, I mentioned Colton Herta, for instance, that are certainly getting some attention. And if things work out, one or two, maybe three of them could possibly be in the Verizon IndyCar Series within the next year or two.
Oh, absolutely. And I really like this kid, Oliver Askew. I was watching him yesterday. You know, I would say if there's anybody that stands, and he led the most laps yesterday as well, in both in practice and qualifying and in the race itself. But Oliver Askew, I look at his resume, and I tell you what, this is one kid to keep your eye on. This is one kid that's going to start moving through the ranks relatively quickly. This is one kid that is getting noticed throughout the series. And his racing resume is impeccable at this point for his age.
Keep in mind, though, he's still in USF Formula 4 2000, so there's still a ways to go before we consider him for an IndyCar Series seat. But like you said, if he continues the potential that he is showing, certainly there's no reason why he can't be, you know, a future contender for a ride maybe in 3 or 4 years. But I wouldn't say an instant possibility for a ride. But, yes, I did take a look at the tapes on that one. He certainly is a driver of the future. I mean, you've also got a few others in that division. For instance, the younger son of Buddy Lazier, Flynn's one possibility. Isla Agron, another female driver driving for Team Pelfrey, is one driver to keep an eye on for the future. So there certainly are some names out there that certainly are getting some attention as you look ahead to, you know, possibilities down the road and further up the ladder on the pyramid for the Boston Road to Indy.
Well, let's talk about the Pro Mazda series, talking about drivers again that are standing out and beginning to get noticed. T.J. Fisher, what do you know about him?
T.J. Fisher, as I mentioned, finished second in race number 2 earlier this morning, then bounced through to claim third in race 1 yesterday. Victor Franzoni, though, is the guy I think to keep an eye on. He completed a clean sweep of both victories yesterday and earlier this morning. Dominated both events, winning both rates by decent margins. So if you're looking for a guy possibly for an Indy Lights ride next year, Franzoni could be one possibility. Drove in an outstanding performance in each of those two events, as did T.J. Fisher.
Well, there's a couple names in the Indy Lights drivers. You know, as we know, there's the Indy Lights is where they come from. That's where James Hinchcliffe came out of. That's where Pippa Mann came out of. That's where Joseph Newgarden came out of. So the Indy Lights series is definitely where people are getting noticed at. And a couple people that I think that you could take a look at in the Indy Lights series is Kyle Kaiser, a great, great driver in the Indy Lights series. Now, didn't have quite as good a showing this week with the Indy Lights at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but Ryan Norman is definitely a driver to keep your eyes on, as well as Garth Rickards.
Norman, Rickards, I still think are a little bit raw right now, so I still think they're at least a year or two away before I think they have serious consideration for advancement to the IndyCar Series. Like I said, Kaiser was a possibility. It was mentioned for a while as being the driver that UCOS wanted for the Indy 500. Didn't work out. Instead went with both Spencer Pigot and Sebastian Saavedra, another Road to Indy graduate we should mention. But like I said, we got a bunch of potential interesting drivers coming up this afternoon when race 2 gets underway. We talk about Yamin trying to go for the clean sweep. Clément de Mayo, the Canadian, has been consistent this weekend. And then you've also got Neil Albarico, Matthias Leist. I mean, there's a bunch of drivers that could possibly have a good result today and certainly pad their resumes looking ahead to silly season in 2018.
We're talking with Matt Embry of Popular Speed, our IndyCar contributor and go-to expert. We're talking about the Indianapolis Grand Prix at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway happening today. Today is race day. I'll be headed out there immediately right after the show. So let's break it down by the numbers, and we'll be giving some repetitive information that we've already given. But I kind of want to have some time to talk about each of these drivers, how you look at them in today's race, also moving forward. forward into the Indianapolis 500. We'll start with Will Power. As we mentioned, Team Penske certainly seems to be the team to beat. It seems to be their race to lose this year with Team Penske certainly being right out there in the front, outside of, as we mentioned earlier, Simon Patajon, which we'll get to here in a minute. But Will Power really needs to have some wins. I know he's kind of had a drought period recently, and I think over the last couple of years we've seen a comeback and a resurgence of Will Power, and this could be just the shot in the arm that he needs.
As long as he gets through turn one, I would say he has a decent chance to do what he did 2 years ago when he took the lead and never looked back, pretty much went wire to wire to claim the victory in the second edition of this event. Looking ahead to the Indianapolis 500, you look at Will Power's possibilities. I think he certainly has a decent chance. I mean, this is the same guy that nearly won this race in 2015, albeit with his wife on the pit lane actually chewing through her water bottle, being so nervous at that stuff. But ultimately, I think it comes down to right now just how Chevrolet will perform. If they are not as quick as they were last year as opposed to Honda, they could have issues being able to claim victory coming up on May 28th, but certainly any of the five Penske drivers can win. I don't necessarily think Will Power, looking ahead to the Indy 500, is the best bet, though, at this point. I think the best bet possibly is either with Helio Castroneves or Joseph Newgard, or maybe even Simon Pagenaud. But obviously, you can't overlook Power. You obviously can't overlook Montoya, considering he's won this race two times.
Yeah, welcome back, Juan Pablo Montoya. A great fan favorite out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Certainly, Helio Castroneves, everybody likes him. Certainly qualified at 128.902. Talk with us about Helio Castroneves, who had a birthday this past week, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's always been a thing where they've always dumped the cake on his backside or his face with those situations in the previous years. I don't know if they did that to him this year. Anyways, I think the big question with Helio right now is the final 50 laps is, can he remain competitive? That's been the Achilles heel that's cost him the last few years, is the final 50 laps or so, the final quarter of the race, is when he starts to, you know, lose his edge and starts to fade. If he could be competitive up to that point, he certainly has a chance to win his fourth Indianapolis 500. But I think that's going to be the key for him, is being able to remain a challenger in those last 50 laps of the race.
Starting third in the number two car, Joseph Newgarden. Obviously, last year he did well. He paid his dues, and I've enjoyed watching this kid grow up, if you will. I just maybe I'm showing my age, but I remember when he raced in the Indy Lights Series. I remember when he began to get noticed, and I remember as he began to pay his dues. And certainly now he's with a team that can certainly make him a competitor. Not that Ed Carpenter couldn't and Sarah Fisher couldn't, but I like Joseph Newgarden. He's a good old boy. He's fun to talk to. He's a down-to-earth kid. And I tell you what, if anybody deserves a shot, it's Joseph Newgarden, and I'm so glad to see him up there in the top three. Talk with us a little bit about Joseph Newgarden.
Well, obviously, he is the now driver at this point. Not necessarily to win the IndyCar Grand Prix, but certainly the Indianapolis 500. Last year, if he had been able to have a little better luck with the fuel mileage and then have a better last fuel stop where the fuel receptacle didn't quite get stuck in the car for an extra second or so, where he couldn't re-challenge Carlos Munoz had Rossi run out of gas ultimately. I think he would have been right up there. But obviously the equipment is better right now. The background is a lot better right now as far as the team is concerned. So I think he's got the best chance he has to win, and obviously that's cliche with a team like Team Penske, but it's fact. I mean, you see how many different drivers who have ultimately made their careers by driving for Team Penske. I mean, you got Rick Mears, Mark Donahue, Emerson Fittipaldi, Alan Sir Jr., a lot of big names, Helio Castroneves, Jill DeFerrin, Sam Hornish Jr., who have won the Indianapolis 500 as a member of Team Penske. It's not coincidence. It's a solid team and a solid core of drivers that always comes to Indianapolis. That's why they're called a super team.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Scott Dixon, moving over to Honda here, let's talk a little bit about Honda and Scott Dixon. I mean, Scott Dixon certainly leads the charge for Honda, but, for Team Honda, but he has never finished in the top five in the Indy road races anyway. And him and Patajon are the only drivers who have finished in the top five in all four IndyCar races this season. So Scott Dixon, thoughts? He's starting in the number four position, number nine car, qualified at 128.659.
I think the better chance for Scott Dixon to win at Indy event this year is in the IndyCar Grand Prix. Not to say he's not a good oval racer, but I just think right now, when you compare his team, Ganassi, with Andretti Autosport, I think Andretti Autosport is the better team. You ultimately look at the situations in terms of qualifying. Dixon and Kanaan struggled in that area with the exception of 2015, and Andretti Autosport has flourished in that area and has started near the front, has been able to stay up front. I mean, let's face it, last year, Ryan Hunter-Reay had the best car. If not for a pit road incident, I think he easily could have won his second Indianapolis 500. So he's going to be a contender. You know, Rossi, without 1 year under his belt, is going to be that much stronger. And even though, yes, they don't have Carlos Budyos in the fold, you have the X factor in Fernando Alonso. So certainly, if a rookie like Alexander Rossi can win the Indianapolis 500, there's no reason why a guy like Fernando Alonso can't be competitive. I mean, we saw even with Kurt Busch, who finished sixth in his one try with Andretti, that it is possible for a driver with limited experience to come into that team and be competitive right out of the box. So you've got a six-car team, and I'd say at least four of those six have a legitimate chance to win the race.
Well, absolutely, and you know we talk about the various different Penske people that are right up there at front. Welcome back, as we just said, Juan Pablo Montoya. A lot of people might say he's one of the greatest drivers of all time. I would certainly think that you'd have to consider other comparables with that. And certainly, when you look at everything that Mario Andretti's won in NASCAR, he's won Daytona, he's won at Indianapolis, he's won in Formula One. But certainly, you can't have the conversation that Juan Pablo Montoya is one of the greatest drivers of all time. Well, except for that one time he ran into the air dryer, but we'll never let him forget that. Juan Pablo Montoya, a qualifying five in the number 22 car, at a speed of 128.655.
Obviously, no rush shown. That was the good news. Now, obviously, longevity will be the question right now. Physically wise, being able to keep up his physical shape, competitiveness, drive during the layoff, that's going to be the big question in my mind, especially when we get to the Indianapolis 500, especially the final 200 miles or so, whether or not he could stay up with the leaders. If he can, he certainly is a contender to win this race. I think I posted in my articles about that's going to be posted coming up early next week. It's going to be titled Gridbusters, and Juan Pablo Montoya is part of that conversation, along with Fernando Alonso, Spencer Pigot, Sebastian Saavedra. All of them are certainly contenders, drivers that do not run all the races, but they could come in Indianapolis and certainly get it, if not necessarily a decent result, have a challenge to possibly run with the race leaders or possibly steal the win.
Let's go with the number six rank, 18 car, Sebastian Bourdais, qualified at 128.373. Sebastian Bourdais has had mixed experiences here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Certainly, we remember in the inaugural Grand Prix, he got caught up in the mix of that. So certainly, Sebastian Bourdais knows how to race at Indianapolis and has had success. How does he have success today at the Indianapolis Grand Prix?
Well, as I mentioned right now, obviously Dale Coyne Racing is not feeling confident about how they will compare in the Indy 500 itself. So this is their Indy 500, I think, ultimately. And if they can't get a result here, it's going to be a log of Mutt the Bay for them, certainly not just for Sebastian Bourdais, but also for Ed Jones as well. So, and that's tough to say for a guy that's won multiple Champ Car World Series championships, but outside his rookie year in 2005, his results at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway have been, in terms of competitiveness as well, have been, I'd say, in the anemic area.
Well, anemic, that's probably a very good way to put it. Well, let's move on to the guy, you know, that everybody's scratching their head about, like, huh? Because, you know, Simon Patajon was the favorite to come in, and we knew that he would have to compete with a teammate, Will Power, to win this race. But certainly going into this race, he was the favorite. I think it's now shifted to Will Power, seeing as how Simon Patajon has qualified in seven. He's in the number one car, certainly by good reason, because he has the number one car. He is the number one driver right now in IndyCar. What's going on with old Simon Patajon? What can he do to rebound in today's Grand Prix?
Somehow it's amazing how that favorite tag can just absolutely get you and make you all of a sudden 10 times worse than what you normally are. I mean, it does strange things. All I could say, though, is if he could survive the first lap, there's issues there, possibly gain some ground early and get himself into that first flight in the early stages, he certainly could be a contender. Look what he did on the final pit stop session of last year's race. He came in third. He ran three amazing in laps. He came out first by 4 seconds, and he waltzed to victory. So if he could get himself into contention in the first half of the race, do not count this man out. He still could find a way to possibly win his third IndyCar Grand Prix in 4 years.
Well, absolutely. We'll see it. Hopefully it pans out for him. We'll go down to the number eight qualifying rank, 28 car, Ryan Hunter-Reay. Obviously, Andretti Motorsports qualified 128.027. He certainly could be a noisemaker today at the Indianapolis Grand Prix.
Yes, but I think where he makes the biggest noise is in the Indianapolis 500 himself. Obviously, I think you talk about guys that feel like they have a bone to pick after last year. I think he is the one that is the most valid of those guys that are not exactly thrilled right now. He had the car to beat last year. Bad luck took it away from him. In fact, his own teammate, Townsend Bell, took it away from him because of that incident. Ultimately, I think right now you look to the Indianapolis 500, he is certainly one of the guys you're at to beat. If Honda is as good as the billing seems to claim that they are, especially in the low downforce trim. But for this day, I think right now it's the guy that starts directly behind him, Alexander Rossi. If you're looking for a guy that has the best chance to win for Andretti, I think that's the better bet as opposed to Ryan Hunter-Reay. To win today,
absolutely.
I mean.
Absolutely. And he qualified in the ninth ranking. So certainly, as you just mentioned, right behind him, 128.027. In the number 10 slot there, right smack dab in the middle, is the mayor himself of Hinchtown, James Hinchcliffe. So glad to see his bounce back and come back after that terrible wreck a couple years ago there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Certainly, he qualifies at 127.498. And certainly, with running with Sam Schmidt Sports, he also could make some noise in today's race.
I think right now, ultimately, you look at Hinch right now and the chances for him in a lotion, I think it's possibly trying to go off sequence early and try to get on a different plan and then maybe get lucky with the yellow flag or something right now. You start in that washing machine of situations, and obviously the possibility to get taken down the first lap is extremely high because you're trying to make up ground. I'll be very interested to see what the strategy is for the Schmidt team to get a result today, if ultimately they cannot show the same competitiveness they showed in practice, because let's face it, they ran a 108.8 in practice in qualifying yesterday, Tom. That's a full second slower than Will Power ran to claim pole. That's a scary thought.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. Marco Andretti, the apparent heir to the throne. It must be rough being with the name Andretti and being able to shake up the car for testing for Alonso there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But Marco Andretti, you know, here's the thing about Marco. He's got his spurts, and when he's hot, he's hot, and when he's not, he's not. There is no in-between lukewarm with Marco Andretti, and certainly, by all accounts, he's a great driver, and he knows what he's doing, but there's always just something, whether it's we saw a couple years ago with Marco in running out of fuel, and then we've seen issues with him with just not being able to maneuver the course correctly or not being able to get the right trim. There's always seems to be something that here at Indianapolis I'm speaking of, specifically here at Indianapolis, that just doesn't seem to be playing in his favor. And being in Andretti, you would think that they've got this place figured out, but Marco has not been able to figure out the Indianapolis Motor Speedway yet, and I don't know that today would be that day.
Yeah, I think you just answered your own question on that. The thing with Marco right now is, yes, he is a great driver. There is no question he has the talent to be competitive. The problem is when he needs to be great, he's not. And you've seen that the last few years in the Indianapolis 500. You've seen that in many other events where he has contended, where he has had to make the big move in order to take the brass ring. He has not been able to grab it. And unfortunately, even if he's in contention, I'd say either today or 2 weeks from now, I think the odds are stacked against him whether or not he's going to be able to step forward and do what he needs to do to be a contender, if not win the race.
Another fan favorite at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, everybody loves Tony Kanaan, Mr. TK himself, qualified 12th in the number 10 car at a speed of 127.279. Certainly not where he wanted to be. Certainly a big disappointment as far as qualification goes. And as we look at what happened last year with Tony Kanaan, got took out in that very first lap, as we've talked about several times today. Tony Kanaan, how does he stay in one piece, finish this race, and have a success today?
Yeah, it was not the day or the week or month to be Tony Kanaan last year. Gets taken out on the first lap at the IndyCar Grand Prix, gets shoved into the pinched into the wall pit wall during the first round of pit stops during the 500, gets his wing broken later in the race, so he got into contact twice in the race itself, still managed to finish, I believe, in the top five, top six on race day last year, which is amazing considering the fact. I think he could throw away qualifying as far as what he'll be able to do next week when we get to time trial mode, but I think ultimately when we get to the race day, he will be in contention at some point in the second half. Whether or not that equates to a victory or not, who's to say, but I think it would be a major shock if he is not up front at some point during the 500 miles in 2 weeks from now.
Well, we've already talked about rookie Ed Jones. I don't know if there's a lot more that we can add to him. Max Chilton qualified 14th in the number 8 car. We'll kind of go through a couple of these together. Connor Daly and Spencer Pigot. Certainly we got some storylines this week with Spencer Pigot.
Obviously runs with Ed Carpenter Racing this week, joins Juncos, the team that he won the Indy Lights Championship 2 years ago. A lot of potential there, but obviously a new team that has been having to piece things together real quick in the last few minutes. Bobitz with both the ride for Pigot and for Saavedra. So it'll be interesting to see how things go for them in their first foray. Realistically, as an IndyCar outfit, they have never run this car before. A lot of new personnel, not necessarily with Indy 500 experience. It'll be very interesting to see how quickly they can join the competitive trail, if at all possible, over the next weeks or so leading to qualifying and then obviously to the race itself.
Well, we can't even run the Indianapolis Grand Prix without talking about the Russians. No, I'm just kidding. Mikhail Aloshin, the only Russian in the field today. I saw in the, I believe it's the Indy Lights series, there is another Russian driver that is in the road to Indy. But all joking aside, Mikhail Aloshin is a very, very, very talented driver, has had success here, and certainly flooded by international media as we watch him make his way through the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Very much a fan favorite as well. He qualifies in the 17th position, number 7 car at 126.925. This is going to be kind of a struggle day for him, but he just kind of got to push through and work through, and he's going to have some challenges.
Funny how the Russian government actually is holding this guy back. Seriously. 2 years ago, S&P has the issues. He lost his ride. It looked like it was going to happen again this offseason. Thankfully, things worked out. I was surprised that he only qualified 17th. I think he'll be a much considered. Remember, last year, this is a guy that, for the Indy 500, qualified in the Firestone Fast 9. So he has the potential to be up there. It's just whether or not the team could put it together, and he could put it together. But I think if you talk about guys who I thought would be further up in the field in the first few events, Aloshin was one of them, and so far he hasn't delivered.
Absolutely, and I don't really know what the holdback with him is here. Carlos Munoz and Charlie Kimball, certainly Charlie Kimball, another great, talented driver. I love what he races for, the races for the diabetes and the insulin and all the great causes that he stands for. But it just seems like here at Indianapolis anyway that Charlie Kimball just, again, one of those drivers that can't seem to figure it out.
Well, actually, I think it's the opposite. He seems to be a guy that seems to find another gear and runs better here than he does all the rest of the season. Surprised, though, like you are, though, he only qualified 19th. Obviously, some kind of problem had to have come up during the first session qualify because he shouldn't be that low down on the grid. Ultimately, you know, got into contact. Excuse me there. Yeah, just a little bit under the weather right now. Ultimately, you know, got into issues at St. Pete, got into issues with willpower at Long Beach. So if he could stay out of trouble, he could possibly get a result maybe on strategy going off sequence. But you're right. Not only Munoz down further on the grid, Kimball's back there, and Graham Rahal, who finished second this race 2 years ago, is starting 20th. I did not see that coming either.
Well, Graham Rahal, certainly you mentioned 20th and qualified at 127.071. It's interesting to me on what has happened with Graham Rahal here recently. I know that he's had a lot going on, certainly with a lot of different changes in his car and obviously getting married, a lot of different things going on. But it just seems like Graham Rahal over the last couple of years just is kind of in a drought for whatever reason that might be. J.R. Hillebrand qualifying in number 21 in the number 21 car. Obviously 21 and 21. 126.133. Talk with us about a little bit about J.R. Hillebrand.
Well, obviously Hildebrand's goal coming in this year was try to prove that he was not an oval specialist. So far he has not done that. He has been obviously 100% better, and we saw that at Phoenix when he qualified well. Ran among the Penske's, was the only guy really able to run among the Penske's all day, finished a solid fourth. Certainly raised his chances looking ahead to the Indy 500, but I think it's just trying to get as many points as he can today because he has not been able to prove that he has been able to figure out the road courses, and that's been the one thing that's held him back. I mean, at Indy Lights and in IndyCar, he has been rock solid on the ovals, but when we get to road racing, he has been absolutely non-existent, unfortunately. At least so far this weekend, it's been the same story in terms of road course trim.
Well, we went through the entire grid of the Indianapolis Grand Prix here in Indianapolis. Race day is today. It begins sometime around 3:30. By the way, if you're out at the track today and you got your ticket, just go on into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and you don't even Motor Speedway Museum, and you don't have to pay admission for that. Fantastic, cool museum to go see. If you like museums, if you like cars, if you like racing, and if you like the history of the Indianapolis 500, that is one place that you have to see while you're at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Been talking with Matt Embry today of Popular Speed. Matt, talk with us a little bit about who you think is going to be the winner and who do you think is going to be the loser, who's going to be the biggest bust, and who's going to be the biggest surprise.
I just can't pick Power until he proves that the, you know, jinx are beyond him right now. I just can't pick him. I think the pick right now is who gets to turn one behind Power. If it's Castroneves or Newgarden, that's got to be the guy that's going to get there, and I believe that Joseph Newgarden's going to get to turn four ahead of Castroneves, and unfortunately so that I think is going to get in Power's way again, and it will be Newgarden that claims victory. As far as surprises, I think maybe you could possibly see something from Spencer Pigot. If he is able to control the aggressiveness and control the bad luck, he could possibly get a result from 16th on the grid. And then the question is, I talk about a guy that really needs a result. It's Connor Daly. Coming into this last year, he had struggled in his first few races with Dale Coyne, bounced back big time at Indianapolis with a great result. He needs that kind of performance again today, I think, to really cement his place at AJ Ford Racing right now, because he has been very much outperformed by Carlos Munoz at each of the first four events this season. And then you talk about disappointment, it's got to be Power. I think he's going to ultimately, the bad luck's going to catch up with him, or he's going to make a mistake. Because remember, it was an unforced error last year that ruined his race when he tried to hold off Alexander Rossi, spun out at the Holman Boulevard quarter. So It's not just necessarily bad luck that gets Will Power's way. Sometimes Will Power gets it his own way as well. So, but ultimately, if you're looking for a race winner, I'd say Joseph Newgard would be a good bet.
Absolutely, and that's who I'm going to officially pick, too, as well. It's going to be so hard to get past Joseph Newgarden, and Penske is so strong in this race and has such a strong representation up front. It's going to be very, very hard. I mean, it could happen. You look at some possible incidents down there at turn one, especially in lap one. You can see we might be able to maneuver through that. We know we're going to see some carnage there in turn one. Just who's going to be involved with it, I don't know. And then you realize that a lot of these more talented drivers that qualified later on are going to have an issue getting past, and you know they've only got 20 pushes to pass, and let's face it, you don't get that opportunity to even use one of them that very much often. So there's just going to be a lot to overcome for those people that qualified in the lower half of the grid. So I think the strongest person in the front of the grid has to be Joseph Newgarden, and he's already proven that he can win on a road course. So absolutely, I think that Joseph Newgarden is our pick for the winner of the Indianapolis Grand Prix, and he's come so close to winning at Indianapolis before. This will be a huge win for him. Matt Embry of Popular Speed, appreciate you joining us and battling through your voice issue today. Any final thoughts and words of wisdom for us, sir?
Well, looking ahead to other events today, obviously Indy Lights, I just got the results. Kyle Kaiser on the pole for that event coming up later this afternoon. So we'll be interested to see how Kaiser does, trying to bounce back for the third place on Friday. And then obviously the warm-up, I think, could tell something. If someone unexpectedly makes a jump up the list, there could be a contender right there. And then obviously if Joseph Newgarden is anywhere near that, he obviously becomes one of the favorites looking ahead. And then on Popular Speed, we got an article coming up called Indiana Jones and the Corner of Doom, and it goes after what exactly we've said, the ability to survive turn one on lap one. We've seen it 3 years in a row, possibly could see four, and ultimately it will be interesting to see if indeed we do have a first lap accident, whose race ultimately is affected or ruined because of it.
Absolutely. So we'll see what the day brings out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Like I said, I'll be headed out there within the next hour or so. It takes me every bit of 15 minutes to get there, so I got a long commute to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We'll be spending the entire day there, so make sure that you follow us on Twitter and our social media outlets, and certainly Matt as well, Matt Embry and Popular Speed. So what are you guys working on this particular week as we move past the Grand Prix and get into qualifications for the Indianapolis 500, the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500?
A lot of insider information from me, obviously. As I mentioned, that Gridbusters article will come out early next week. We'll also have previews looking ahead to time trials and then the race itself the following week. But a lot of different stories, and obviously with the qualifying and the practice times, we may see also a updated griditology list before time trials itself. So a lot to look forward to as we get to probably one of the most interesting and probably one of the toughest action-packed weeks of the racing circuit. They say that the four laps in qualifying are the toughest laps you run the entire season, and you'll certainly see why when we head down to the track. Can't wait to be down there with you next weekend.
I look forward to it, sir. You have yourself a good weekend and happy Grand Prix race day, and we'll talk again soon.
You too.
Matt Embry of Popular Speed joins us and talks with us about the Indianapolis Grand Prix happening today. It's race day, folks. Don't worry, other sports fans. We got about a half an hour that we are going to have an abbreviated show. We're going to end about a half an hour early. But joining us next will be Mo from the BS Sports Show. Yeah, we still got some other sports going on, and we're going to talk about it right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Shiny shoes. Don't look too hard, might hurt yourself. Known to get the color red, the blue. I'm a dangerous man with some money in my pocket.
Keep up.
So many pretty girls around me and they're waking up the rocket.
Keep up.
Why you mad? Fix your face. Ain't my fault they all be jacking.
Keep up.
Players only.
Come on. Put your pinky. Bring the sugar. Move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to geico.com and you can save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Hi, Tom Bodette spreading the word about Motel 6's cool new hashtag. It's all about the thrilling stuff you can do with the money you save at Motel 6 instead of some expensive hotel with a lot of fancy stuff you don't need. Thrills, not frills. Just post all those thrill pics you take on your summer travels with the hashtag thrills, not frills. Boom. I mean, hashtag boom. Hashtag this is awesome. I'm Tom Bodette for hashtag Motel 6 and hashtag we'll leave the light on for you.
Bobby, you're here again.
Yeah, my doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of seven entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of seven sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dub Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a beat poet.
Name. Name your. Name your price.
A tool, an idea, an inspiration. To do more than just say what you want to pay. Oh, no. But to see the options that could fit your budget.
Steve,
enough bongos.
Find car insurance that fits your budget at Progressive.com.
Makes me want to dance. Steve!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark Lassell, President. Today, it is race day here in Indianapolis at the famed, world-famous Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Obviously, just getting us warmed up for the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500. We're standing by for Mo with the BS Sports Show. Hopefully, he can join us. We're going to talk, a little bit about the NBA Finals and some because he's from Mo from the BS Sports Show. We're just going to BS about sports on a sports talk show. That's what we do. Hopefully that he'll be able to join us here in the next few minutes or so. So certainly what we've been talking about today is the headline, or if you will, of the Indianapolis Grand Prix. And so make your way. And here's the – I think it's $30. It's not going to break the bank or anything. That I believe will get you grandstand entrance. That might only be general admission, so don't quote me on that. But either which way, there's tickets available. You can walk right up, or you can just order online and pick them up there, or whatever is easiest for you. Your ticket gets you a free admission to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, which is fantastic. And they've got another secret museum there too that's not open to the public. It's in the basement. And yeah, they've got some real jewels and treasures there. But honestly, go out there and take some time to go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway today. And here's the thing, as I mentioned in my article on Speedway Digest, selfless plug. But if you're not a crowd person, when I say crowd, of course, 40,000 might still be a crowd, but certainly not in comparison or in contrast to the Indianapolis 500, where you'll have, hundred thousand people or so compared to the 35 or 40,000 that would be there for the Grand Prix. So certainly not a cloud in the sky. I'm looking out the Ballon studio windows right now. Not a cloud in the sky. So it's a great day to come out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Indianapolis Grand Prix. 14-turn road course. And I tell you, if you've not been to the road course, one, go check it out, because you really got to experience it at least once. But it is different in the aspect that the drivers come down the front straight backwards. I say backwards. They're not. They're going forward, but they're just coming from the opposite direction. So if you would think about how the oval is situated, they're be coming down the front stretch and across the start finish line, across the famed pagoda and pylon, scoring pylon there, coming out of turn one and headed into turn four. As with the oval, they're coming out of turn four and headed into turn one. So they're coming in from the opposite direction. And then certainly, as we talked about, as they come down that back stretch, that final or that front stretch, I should say, not back stretch, that front stretch past the start finish line in the pylon and in the pagoda, there's a lot of room to maneuver there. There's a lot of room to pass there. You could get 2-3 wide cars there. The problem is very, very, very quickly coming into where what would typically be turn four in that area, in that vicinity, is turn one. And that just shrinks almost like shrinks in size, like by halfway. You'll be lucky if you could get two cars at the same time around that turn. That turn is really a turn that causes a lot of problems. That's why, as we mentioned, when we were talking with Matt Embry from Popular Speed, that is one turn that sees a lot of action. And so what happens is drivers try to use that front stretch as an opportunity maybe to use one of their pushes to pass, and you got a short window when you're going 100. Again, by IndyCar standards, 128 is not the fastest, because we'll see 230-ish, 233-ish in just a couple weeks. But still, going at 100 miles an hour is a very, very small window to make the calculation of if you can pass, should you pass. And by the time you've made that decision, you're almost to that turn one. So if you get into that situation and you don't make that decision quick enough, that's where the carnage begins to happen. And that's why turn one is known to create a situation. I think, quite frankly, it makes drivers very, very nervous to be able to maneuver around there. They'd rather try to make their passes and stuff at a different point in the course or a different point in the track, as opposed to with the turn one there. So we're standing by for Mo for the BS Sports Show. I'm hoping that he can join us. We are having an abbreviated show today, so if he can't join us today, we'll catch up with him next week. That much is for sure. If you do want to talk IndyCar sports, you can certainly tweet us at @TBalance. Now, also, you can follow us at ProIndy, at ProIndy1. You can also follow us at @2HotCorner, at @BreakingRank1. That's our college sports. 2HotCorner is our MLB. Indy and May is our IndyCar exclusive dedication to IndyCar. So there's really nowhere on social media that you can't find us, or you can certainly call us. We got a few more minutes here. We'll take some calls if you're so inclined to call. 917-889-8516 is the digits. So certainly we got Dale Coyne's going to be going out there to do some warm-up session in just about an hour. All the race drivers and race teams are going to be out there. And I tell you again, what a great time it is to – we're trying to see if we can't get a hold of Mo from the BS Sports Show. If not – we'll probably go ahead and call it a day so we can get out to the track herself. So, what? and you can't be hating on me now. Trying to bail early, trying to get off the show early, and to get down myself down there to 16th and Georgetown. So certainly this is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. We bring you breaking news, commentary, scores, stats, standings, and highlights. And we provide interviews and sound bites. Great interview with Matt Embry. Certainly Matt is the reason Matt is our IndyCar expert and go-to person. Every year he comes on with us and talks IndyCar with us. And certainly excited to have him a part of the Balance team in IndyCar and so forth. And I'm privileged to be down there covering it for the Balance and for Speedway Digest. I'll be writing and putting up some articles throughout the weekend and throughout the month of May on Speedway Digest as well. So I think we've got a word from Mo. He's going to call now. So we'll up oh, there. He is. There's Mo from the BS Sports Show. Mo, how are you doing, sir?
Good, man. Good. Sorry, I'm a couple minutes late. Issues here at home with the kids.
Oh, I understand, and you know, I totally get it. Like I said, we were going to do an abbreviated show today anyway, so it's cool. No biggie because it's race weekend here at the in Indianapolis, the Indianapolis Grand Prix. I know we don't talk a lot of racing with you and I, but have you had a chance to take a look at the IndyCar grid, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis?
I have not. You know, I try to get into racing this time of year, and usually as the 500 gets closer, I get into it a lot more. Actually, I took a ride in the truck of Roger Penske the other day. It was neat. It was filled up with all kinds of different swag that I may have taken a piece or two of. But the Grand Prix so far, no, I haven't really got into it much.
Oh, that's fine. No problem. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the NBA. We do have the NBA Finals, yes, still going on. So let's talk a little bit about yesterday's action, the Celtics and the Wizards. Very, very close game there with Boston and Washington. Again, and no big surprises there. But what are your thoughts on the Celtics and the Wizards?
Well, it was nice to finally see a close game between these two teams. You know, most of the games haven't really been close towards the end. You know, for Boston, I think they missed out on a big opportunity to close this team out last night. And this Washington team, if I'm Boston, would scare me to death because you'd never know when John Wall gets going and when he can really take off, you know. So we saw it in the second half last night where he had 3 points in the first half and then just exploded for 23, including the game-winning three-pointer in the second half last night. So if I'm Boston, there's got to be some concern there. You know, the offense just kind of sputtered out there towards the end of the game last night for anybody else that's not Isaiah Thomas. I think Boston's got to be better on the defensive end, which is, you know, a lot of what they've been known for. But I think that Bradley Beal starting to come alive again as well is going to be very bad for Boston. To me, it's a total toss-up when it comes to Game 7 on Monday.
Well, yeah, everybody wants a Game 7. Well, they've got one, that's for sure, and I agree with you. I think Boston missed a big opportunity, one that I think that probably the Wizards will come out on top of. We got to talk about the Cavaliers because it's the playoffs. It's the Cavaliers, it's LeBron James. Got to talk about them. But certainly it doesn't look like there's anything that anybody that can stop the Cavaliers in their quest for another Eastern Conference championship.
No, it really doesn't feel like it. And here's the thing about most teams, you know, to have that much time off when they're rolling like Cleveland is, you wouldn't want to see it. But for Cleveland, I think that's the only team that maybe it really does benefit because you've got LeBron James who can sit and rest. Now you probably geared up to play even more minutes coming up in these playoffs. You got guys who've had nagging injuries like J.R. Smith and Kevin Love get more time to rest. And, you know, I think it's a good team, a good thing for this Cavs team. It doesn't seem like either one of these two teams, Boston or Washington, has enough firepower to take them down in seven games. If it was a one game series, I think it'd be anybody's ball game, but seven games, you know, for one of these other teams to win four games against this Cavaliers team, it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And I really honestly believe, Tom, that if LeBron James leads the Cavaliers to another title this year, the talk between him and Michael Jordan, that gap closes tremendously.
I think it does. I think it closes tremendously, especially when you're talking about if the only thing you're saying is the greatest basketball player of all time is rings. But certainly, yes, I would say that gap does close immensely between Michael Jordan and LeBron James. And I don't think those two personally have a competition going on, but the world certainly has a competition going between the two of them. So let's go over to the Western Conference. Certainly the Warriors and the Jazz, Gordon Hayward with the Jazz. Talk a little bit about Gordon Hayward. He's coming up on his free agency. I mean, I think a lot of people would like to see the Pacers take a look at him. I know Caleb Swanigan is going to be working out with the Pacers this week. So let's digress a little bit, talk a little bit about the Pacers, because I think Gordon Hayward is going to stay with Utah. They're going to pay him a lot of money. They're going to do whatever they can do to keep him there. And honestly, I don't think that he wants to go anywhere, so I think it's just fluff talk, us talking about wanting to see Gordon Hayward here. Certainly, you know, we remember him, the hometown story. We remember him, the skinny little kid from Brownsburg that made his name with Butler University. And then kind of everybody forgot about him until he went out to Utah. And they're like, huh? Who's this guy? Completely metamorphosized into a completely different, full-blown all-star NBA-type player. So I think he's going to stay there at Utah. But let's have the discussion. Gordon Hayward, and what a combination that would be if the Pacers could work out something. Again, we're just talking at this point. There's so much that has to happen for these two variables to come into place. But how cool would it be to have Caleb Swanigan and Gordon Hayward on the same team at the Pacers? I think at that point they make the decision to let Paul George go anyway.
Well, I think you're looking at the most important time where it's free agency in the NBA draft and Pacers history, because I think this determines whether Paul George stays or goes. But with Gordon Hayward, you know, I guess at this point it becomes what's more important to him, because he's already made a lot of money and he's going to make a lot more money, whether it's in free agency or with the Utah Jazz. But at what point does he realize that? How competitive can you be in Utah? You know, it's one of those teams that seems like it can only get to a certain plateau, kind of where the Pacers are right now. You can only get, you know, you're only going to go so far. And what's important to him is winning important to him and trying to compete for an NBA championship. Then maybe going to an Eastern Conference team like the Pacers or the Celtics makes more sense. You know, the Celtics seem like they're one guy away from, you know, from taking over the Cavaliers. And for the Pacers, Paul George, what he's desperately needed is another creator on that basketball team, another guy who can create his own shot and get his own shot, not only to free Paul George up to do more, but also when Paul George is on the bench. You know, it's always seemed the Pacers fall apart when Paul George has to take a seat. So a guy like Gordon Hayward would make a ton of sense, either A, to come home, or B, to go play with his former college coach and Brad Stevens. I guess it's going to be, like I said, what's important to him is the extra $45 million important to him, which it should be to anybody, but at what point is winning going to be more important to him? And if so, does he see that happening in Utah? Because how many free agents, honestly, are you going to lure to Utah? You're going to have to continuously build through the draft and always be, it seems like, a young team with maybe a hanger on there like Joe Johnson towards the end of his career. So I guess it's what happens with him at that point. As far as Caleb Swanigan goes, I think it'd be a good pickup for the Pacers. The only thing is after 2 years of college, he's shown a lot, but is he going to be NBA ready? He could be a project that will be a great player in a couple of years, but do the Pacers have that kind of time to wait? You know, do they have that kind of time to make Paul George happy? Is this the guy that's going to do it? We'll have to wait and see, but a Caleb Swanigan, Gordon Hayward type thing, the Pacers definitely make for an interesting offseason, and definitely I think would keep Paul George around.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're 100% right about that. Well, I know we got you for a limited amount of time here, so we certainly want to talk about the Spurs and the Rockets out there in the West. Certainly, we're always talking about the Spurs and the Rockets in the West. Again, I don't know. We're still talking about who can stop the Cavaliers and who can stop the Warriors. We're certainly seems like we're in a head-on collision again, as we talked about at the very beginning of the year, for a Golden State and Cleveland matchup again. And I don't know how Golden State can even stop Cleveland, but let's talk about the Rockets and the Spurs. Who do you think is going to be that team to come together with that?
Well, I just, it's getting harder and harder for me to look at the Spurs as knocking off the Warriors as the injuries continue to pile up. With Tony Parker out and the ankle injury to Kawhi Leonard, who obviously is their most important player, but we saw the Spurs get it done the other night without either one of those players and with five D-League players on their basketball team. So it's hard to ever count out Greg Popovich, but without a healthy Kawhi Leonard, I think it's going to be damn near impossible for them to knock off the Warriors. If Kawhi Leonard's healthy and plays starting Sunday, I think we'll really see Sunday night when Game 1 starts that where we are in Kawhi Leonard. I think that's where we decide what happens in the series. I think it could be a little closer than we think, but I still think the Warriors overtake them. And it's funny to me how the Warriors have gone from this beloved team of 2 years ago to, you know, quite the hated team in the NBA in the span of 2 years. It's epic in their fall from grace from beloved to hated in the span of, you know, a season and a half, 2 years.
Well, absolutely. So let me ask you this. At what point, maybe we're getting to the point where we're actually rooting for LeBron James. And maybe we don't like LeBron James so much just because we have to face them as Pacer fans. We have to face him all the time, and we'd rather him just go away. Are we to the point where we're rooting for a LeBron James retirement?
No, not at all. I mean, as a Pacers fan, it's crazy because as much damage as he's done to my team over the years, but I gain more and more respect for LeBron every single year. Just, I mean, obviously not the whining and crying to the ref, but just how hard he plays, the what he does on the basketball floor, and, you know, seems like such a good guy off the floor. No scandals, no controversies. It's hard not to like a guy like that, and it's sad to see people who root for his demise because he's a good dude and a great basketball player. I think the NBA will suffer tremendously when LeBron James goes, and I hope it's no time soon. I mean, there's no reason that LeBron can't get to two or three more finals in the rest of his career. I would, if I was starting a team right now, Tom, at his age, even at 32, I would take LeBron James as my number one pick in a heartbeat, because I think there's a shot that he's in the finals the next 3 years and gives me the best chance to win a championship. So I think the NBA suffers with LeBron James' retirement.
Well, they suffer in a lot of ways. I mean, certainly they would suffer in the aspect as far as marketability and the ability to have one of the world's greatest players. So certainly, yes, that's just lofty talk. But, well, you know, I think as Pacer fans, we just want him to go away. Go somewhere else.
Or just be injured when they play the Pacers. Be injured.
Yeah, or well, he did set one game, and he came to Indianapolis, right, in a home game, and I think he sat down, and that just fumed everybody. So if you're a Pacer fan and you're buying Pacer tickets, don't worry about LeBron James setting, but maybe you're a LeBron James fan more than you are a Pacer fan. I don't know. You know, one other thing, certainly we remember the passing of the wife of Chris Berman and dies in a car crash. She was actually at a ball game with the Mets in San Francisco when he was notified of the accident. Any thoughts on that story that came out this week?
Yeah, I mean, what a tough year for Chris Berman. The reduced role at ESPN and the loss of his wife. It, my heart goes out to him and his family. What a terrible way. Plus, he had to endure a Mets game on top of it. What a bad week for Chris Berman. I feel terrible for him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and also here's the other thing. Just some NFL offseason stuff. I tell you what, as our draft is complete, the draft is over, we've got a very clear picture of what's happening here in Indianapolis with the Indianapolis Colts and across the NFL. As we look at the strength of schedule, if you look at what Vegas put out, and I know you follow that sort of thing, certainly we come out on top, but certainly the AFC South is voted to be one of the tightest races in the entire NFL based on schedule and strength of schedule. And so certainly we've got issues that we've got to put together. And then we still don't know how healthy Andrew Luck is. And as Chris Ballard and Irsay and Pagano has said, we're going to go on Andrew Luck's time, not our timetable. We know Andrew Luck wants to be out there, and certainly we hope that he can be out there by the time game one starts. But every game that he's not there hurts the Colts, and we've got to get these new draft players like Hooker and others that we brought on up to speed and do that relatively quickly. And we know the Hooker's going to have some issues because of his injuries where he's not going to be able to participate in OTAs and a lot of other things and probably won't even be ready to go until camp and if then. So certainly there's some challenges that have been put together and put in place for the Indianapolis Colts. Final thoughts on them?
Well, I think that you know, this is the first offseason where I've had, you know, kind of a feeling of zen. Like, I feel like it's back under control in that Colts front office with Chris Ballard there as a GM. I think he's upgraded the defense enough that where, you know, if Andrew Luck is still, you know, moving around a little gingerly or doesn't play these first couple of games, I think that he's worked with the defense enough to where we can hold teams to lower point totals in these first couple of games, you know, with these guys that he's brought on, especially this defensive line. You know, and we've got guys, if we've beefed up that offensive line enough, we've got guys who can run the football. So we've got other aspects of this team that have been built up enough, I think, in this offseason that can sustain not 100% Andrew Luck or a first couple of games without him. But again, like I said, you know, this to me has been an offseason where I finally feel comfortable, like things are getting done and moving in the right direction more than they have in the last 3 or 4 years that Ryan Grigson was there and, you know, really destroyed this front office. So I feel good about the Colts moving forward. Andrew Luck obviously is the biggest thing to us, but I feel comfortable that we can move forward, you know, with a better defensive line and a better running game with this offensive line. So the Colts will look better, I think, this season for sure.
We've been talking with Mo from the BS Sports Show, and I tell you, I just because I got to say, Conor McGregor. So certainly a UFC chief, pretty confident that there is going to be a fight between Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, does this fight happen?
Yeah.
A lot of talk, but it's going to make a lot of money if it does happen.
You know, I really do like Dan Patrick's idea, though, that if Floyd Mayweather can't knock him out in 5 rounds and it switches to a UFC fight, it's going to happen, and we're going to watch. I think that one thing that will be interesting is, you know, Conor McGregor just goes after opponents, and Floyd, you know, just kind of boxes to stay alive. He's very strategic in what he does. You know, he doesn't look to knock people out. So that's the one advantage that I think McGregor will have is that, you know, and that could get him knocked out, for honestly, but I think the aggressiveness of McGregor will make this fight interesting. And it'll be something fun to watch, and it's going to get Conor McGregor paid. But the bad thing for the UFC is I think that payday for Conor McGregor for this fight will make it harder for the UFC to control him, and that could be a bad thing in the end. But, you know, I'd love to see it be a half-and-half type of fight, that if McGregor doesn't get knocked out in 5 rounds and it switches to UFC, that's what I really would – I think, you know, Dan Patrick hit it right on the nose. That's what I'd like to see.
Conor McGregor. Just got
to
say
it's
man.
It's fun to say, too.
It is, isn't it? Mo from the BS Sports Show, thank you, sir, for joining us. What are you and Mr. Elvis working on this week as far as the BS Sports Show?
Our golf games. We have a golf tournament that we're planning coming up, and I'm sure there'll be some type of bet where somebody will lose, and it usually tends to be me, and I've lost a couple tattoos to him now. But, you know, big thing this weekend is I'll be watching my Cubs continue to whoop up on your St. Louis Cardinals like they did last night.
Well, let's hope the Cubs could do better against the Cardinals than they could against the Yankees. And I know I saw that too. I purposely left that out of my agenda. I'm glad I like the way you snuck that in there. So, Mo from the BS Sports Show, we appreciate you joining us. You have yourself a good week. I'm headed down to the track, and certainly we'll be posting pictures and all kinds of stuff. You know, Carb Day. You should come down for Carb Day, dude. We got. On stage, Carb Day, you've got Bare Naked Ladies and Steve Miller. And off stage, you got Half Naked Ladies. You cannot lose on Carb Day. And a lot of racing and action going on here in the month of May. So maybe you could.
Well, somebody be driving us
here.
Home?
Uber.
All right, fair enough.
Fair enough. All right, good. We'll talk about it. All right, Mo, you have yourself a good weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Thank Mo from the BS Sports Show. Always love having him on. We try to have him on once a week. And what we do is we just BS about sports. What a job we have here on the Balance Radio Network. And I know we spent a lot of time today talking about the Indianapolis Grand Prix out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's race day. That's what we got to talk about. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Big, great being with you. I'm headed out to the track. Catch up with me there on @TBalance. Across our social media, and again, proud to be out there covering for you guys, the fans here at The Balance, and of course, Speedway Digest. And thank you, Matt Embry of Popular Speed, our IndyCar expert, for joining us today and talking with us about the Indianapolis Grand Prix. My name is Tom Marquis. I'm out of here. We'll see you next Saturday. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.